to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
I've heard it said that the most important organ of sex is our human brain. It turns out that especially because our brains are capable of enormous change and growth, it is also a vital organ to keep interested and challenged. We'll find out what keeping your brain interested has to do with your ability to move your body, to maintain vitality even into old age, and to stay healthy. I'm talking today with the fascinating Anat Baniel, who will be talking with me about the 9 secrets of lifelong vitality. Welcome to Full Power Living, where we bring you a wide variety of guests and programs with the aim of helping us all to understand the power and importance of human emotions. We broadcast over blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living and emotionalpro.com, and we distribute through iTunes. In addition, you're invited to call our toll-free number, which is 888-498-0570. 888-498-0570. We welcome your participation in our show. Well, Anat Baniel was born and raised in Israel. She is the creator of the Anat Baniel Method, which has brought her acclaim as a miracle worker for her ability to bring new life and vitality to the thousands of special needs children with whom she's worked. She's also helped their parents, trained hundreds of practitioners, and by the way, she's about to start her once every 2 years practitioner training for those of you who might have interest. And she's done ongoing revolutionary discoveries. She keeps coming with new things, which we'll talk about later also. She's a dancer and clinical psychologist and became interested in the functioning of the human brain, which led in her early 20s to her close association with Dr. Moshe Feldenkrais, who is arguably the greatest movement scientist of the 20th century. She's never allowed herself to be stopped by currently limiting beliefs about what's possible, and she approaches people as whole, unified, moving, feeling, and thinking human beings. She works at her Anat Baniel Method Center in Marin County, California, travels extensively, gives public presentations, and teaches workshops for parents and professionals. You can find her on the web at AnatBanielMethod.com. That's A-N-A-T-B, as in boy, A-N-I-E-L, Method.com. Wow. Anat Baniel, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I'm very happy and excited about this.
Yeah, I'm glad
we're looking forward to our interview.
I'm glad we got you here. You know, I attended two public presentations you did, and I heard you mention some of the 9 essentials, and each time I really thought I understood what you were talking about, but each time I also learned something new, and it wasn't until I read your book, Move Into Life, that I really began to understand, and that's because you're talking about things that aren't familiar to us in our usual way of living and thinking. At least that's my take on it. So let's start, because you're talking about how important it is to stretch and challenge our brains. Why is that important?
Well, it's important. Our brains are used to are built to continue growing and increasing with the. We can explain it a little bit later. Complexity, richness of connections that give us freedom. And we thrive. What I realized, both with children and adults, because I've also worked a lot, you know, with musicians and dancers and just regular folks, is that the bottom line for our health and vitality is actually continued growth and positive change in the brain. Because anytime we learn something or do something new, there is a change in the brain or we won't be doing it. So getting our, you know, it's just like we think about muscles, we need to use them for them to stay strong and the tissue to stay vibrant and alive and elastic and young in that sense. The same thing with the brain. There's a scientist, a biologist, that said, we are born to die unfinished. And I love that quote,
mm-hmm.
because I'll remember his name in a second, but when there is a, we look at the human brain and we compare it, let's say, with the apes or, you know, the closest neighbors to us in our functioning, we ask, what's the difference? What makes Stephen Gould, by the way, that's the name of the scientist who I quote from one of his books. We say, is our brain that much bigger, or do we have parts in the brain that they don't have? And the difference is not in the size, is not that meaningful. It's there is a difference in the size, but there's also a difference in the genetic coding that our brains are structured to not finish, to not close the conversation, to not be complete throughout life. So basically, we are born to be babies all our lives. in the sense, we are born to mature, but to be babies in the sense that we are always ready to change and learn and refine and improve the next thing. And when we do that, we have the experience of vitality. And my observation over all these years and thousands of people, that people get stronger, healthier. We have not done any research yet in terms of the correlation of this process to the strength of the immune system, but we're getting closer to be doing that. But from observation, both my personal experience and everyone around me and my students and clients, and the kids, they get healthier. So we are built to do that. We are built to keep growing and evolving and getting new connections and positive brain change throughout life. We
wow.
should do that.
And so this concern that we should expect that our body will stiffen and our vitality wane as we get older is really baseless. And I know in your book, Move Into Life, you talk about the power of falling into the negative impact, really, of falling into routines and rituals and coasting.
Yes. The belief or the image or the idea that progressive age brings progressive deterioration of function, flexibility, strength, and so on is not false. It is accurate, but it doesn't have to be that way. It depends what we do. So the brain is very, what you mentioned earlier, is very what's called plastic. That means it changes all the time, actually. The brain is the organ in our body that's most responsive to our experiences. So whatever happens to us, the brain keeps all the time changing. But it doesn't just change in what I call positive brain change, that means growth and increased possibilities and freedom and connections, that always comes with more connections and differentiation, but it also can change in the opposite direction. That means that the way we use ourselves, that means habits and routines and so on, groove in the existing patterns deeper and deeper. This is also brain change, and we lose kind of connections that we don't use, and the brain has a lot of like excess connections that are available to be brought in. We lose those because we keep using the same thing. That is also brain change. It's called Hebbian plasticity. It's after the name of the scientist who discovered this phenomena. So what happens is our brains change whether we want it or not, but they're either going to change in terms of growth and greater vitality and possibilities, or the typical aging that we are used to think. We all die at the end. That is a guarantee, as far as I know.
Yeah.
But the question is, how do we get there? And mm-hmm. we can get there with greater mobility is cognitive alertness. So I'll just bring as an example my father. My father is 95, and in November he's going to turn 96. Today he lives in Israel. I live in the United States. Today he flew from Tel Aviv to Zurich. He's taking, with his companion, my mother passed away a bunch of years back, he's taking a 7-day vacation in the mountains in Switzerland, and the place that is about, I don't know, 3,000 feet up above, you know, sea level. And what he's going to do every day, part of what he's going to do is take a walk in the forest, in the trails, twice a day for about an hour, hour and a half each time. There is a startup that they just got the funding for. He's a chemist and biochemist and some invention, never mind what. And he's never been terribly athletic. He's had illnesses in his life, but he has taken my training program, by the way, when I did it years ago in Israel. And he's getting older. He's moving a little slower. He takes naps in the afternoon. He's different than he was when he was 50 in that sense. But he has a full life. He's alert cognitively. You know, I can ask him any questions about science, and I get a really magnificent brain. And he's very, very mobile and coordinated and you know, travels the world.
All right. I know this is a big question with a big answer, but essentially, what is he doing differently than he was doing before he took your training?
Well, actually, he started doing it before he took my training because I started teaching classes, and he was one of my very first students. He and my peers from – I taught – I was a dancer, so I had dancers and my father. And a lot of time he did it better than them because he had the capacity for thinking that it was a little more evolved, but he wasn't as flexible, or, you know, he didn't jump mm-hmm. as they did and so on. But what did he do by taking the training? He went through movement lessons, and we're going to talk about the essentials, I hope, soon, but movement is a central part of the conversation. But he took movement lessons, and what those movement lessons are done in a way where he explored new ways of moving very gently, very slowly. He was in his late 60s or early 70s when he took the training program. And he experienced new ways of doing things, but it was gentle for everybody. He became more aware, and his brain, you know, created a lot of new connections, and I could see him changing in front of my eyes. So he really fed himself and his brain enormous amount of information. The way he was moving improved. The organization of the movement improved. The mapping of their different parts. All of us move, that we move. So we have enough connection between our brain and our bones, our muscles, our body, that the brain can manage the movement. We have enough, but everybody has less connection between the brain and the body than they could have. In other words, the mapping of the body, big swaths of the body are mapped as like one thing rather than with more detail. That means we have less freedom and less precision of coordination. That process of increasing the differentiation and the precision is remarkable in its outcomes, because both for adults and for children, like children on the autism spectrum have that in very extreme ways very often, that they move their bodies in like they're just a few blocks. That's also why they move in a way that looks so, you know, like they're, you know, not fluid, and they don't look like graceful, right? Mm-hmm. They look a bit robotic. It's because there isn't, and when we work with them and we get them to feel and experience and recognize more and more parts of themselves and how they, and then coordinate them, they start talking, they start understanding math, they can all of a sudden understand, see letters and write. So this whole thing of creating more refinement in the brain and richness of connection between the brain and the body is just amazing. I mean, I never knew, I didn't know what to expect. You know, I just did what I did, and I got to understand more because I always knew it was about the brain. So whatever worked and however I understood it, I went after it more and more. And the outcomes are really stunning. surprising. Mm-hmm. Very often we can't predict what they'll be, but they're very positive.
So that does lead us to the nine essentials, because as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, okay, you've got to be aware, you've got to be willing to try something new, and you have to be willing to learn, and a number of these are the learning, or the nine essentials. So how did you come to the nine essentials? So tell me that first, and then we'll look at them.
Yeah, perfect. I was sitting on a plane, flying from Chicago back to San Francisco after teaching a two-week professional training program. So I had about 80, 85 adults in the room that every day studied with me for 6 hours. And I watched them learn and grow. And in the afternoons, I worked. I did a few private lessons every afternoon with children, with small, you know, young children that I do a lot of work with. And some of those kids came, were not doing, you know, I just started with them. Some of the kids were already thriving. So I just came over me and I said, what's the difference between children that are well, you know, that are healthy, and adults that are, you know, considered your average well adult? Mm-hmm. And I came up, I wrote actually on the back of an envelope, I came up with 19 differences that I perceived between the child, the well child and the well adult, and I called them principles of usefulness.
Mm-hmm.
And I then took, when I decided to write the book, I took those principles of usefulness, and I spent a year working with them, because some of them had some overlap and things like that, and I came up with 8 essentials, actually. And then when I wrote my book, Moving to Life, it became very clear that one of the essentials had to be broken up to 2, and I came up with 9. Then that's how I formed the 9 essentials. Mm-hmm. So I asked, what is it that children do spontaneously that gets them to learn and develop the way they do? Because, you know, from birth on, the rate of change and growth is remarkable, both in terms of what we see the child, you know, doing at 2 years old. You tell them to do something and they look at you and they say, no, don't want to. You know, try to get a dog to do that. I mean, they do it in other ways, but, you know, try to get a monkey to talk. You know, you will not succeed. You can get communication and some comprehension of language, but it's an enormous amount of time. And between that newborn, a day or 2 day old, that has no voluntary movement, can't control the head, just starting to master sucking, you know, and then you look at them when they're 7, and then you look at them when they're 20. It's like the enormous change in learning. It's just remarkable. And if you look at the brain, we are born with about 22% of the brain size weight that we will have as adults. And the connections that we will have, because the increase of weight is primarily, you know, the connections that are formed. For that to be successful, because I worked with a lot of kids where this was not as successful as it should have been, the kids that are healthy do it spontaneously. So I looked and said, what do they do? Because what they do is what the brain needs to be successful in learning and growth. That was my assumption. And that's how I came to the 9 essentials.
Wow. I love that story. It's time for our first break. I'm talking today with Anat Baniel, who's author of Move Into Life, and her second book is Kids Beyond Limits. She's the creator of the Anat Baniel Method, a way of working with our bodies and brains, our bodies. It starts first with our brains. And we're going to find out how you can turn on your own learning switch when we come back here on Full Power Living following these messages. As a parent, have you found all the parenting information you've been hearing lately a bit confusing? Are you having trouble sorting out the best response to your defiant child, or feeling hopeless about regaining respect from your teen, or determining whether your actions as a parent are the right ones? instead of the usual pressures of parenting that you've been experiencing, you can partner with your child, raising incredible kids who are destined to become amazing adults. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, giving you the opportunity to become the incredible parent for incredible kids. We have the method and the tools. You bring your optimism for learning and the kids. Raise Incredible Kids offers a comprehensive system for raising kids who are responsible, make their own great decisions, and become immune to peer pressure. To get you ready for this new era in parenting, get my free 10-page report, Incredible Communication That Helps You Create Incredible Kids, by visiting RaiseIncredibleKids.com now. That's RaiseIncredibleKids.com. Welcome back to Full Power Living. Please call in with your questions or comments toll-free, 888-498-0570. You can do that while I make these announcements. Next week, we continue our monthly feast with the Accessing Universal Intelligence people. This is your opportunity to ask questions about your own life and relationships and get direct, tailored responses from the highest and best part of your own self. Sonia and Daniel Rechnitzer have returned to Australia for a while, but in their absence, we're calling on people that they have trained. So as you hear each of them on this show, you'll be impressed that everyone, including you, can learn to get answers from this amazing part of yourself. Next week, it's Audrey Pearson, who is a woman with amazing abilities to tune in to higher self for answers and guidance. She has helped me tremendously. I'm sure she'll be able to help you too. So be sure to listen next Thursday, August 14th at 9 a.m. Pacific time, and bring your questions. You can also sign up at emotionalpro.com to be on our mailing list so that I can share with you details for all our upcoming shows, as well as information about the projects in which we're involved that are helping our world and contributing to personal and world transformation. Go to emotionalpro.com. My guest today is Anat Baniel, who's creator of the Anat Baniel Method. So, before the break, Anat, we were talking about the nine essentials, and they are movement with attention, turning on the learning switch, experiencing the power of subtlety and gentleness, variation, going slow, developing enthusiasm, establishing flexible goals, creating our lives through imagination and dreams, and awareness. So I don't think we're going to have time to go through every single one of them, but certainly I'd like to dive into these. Which ones do you think are the most important for people to know about?
Tell you in a second, there's one thing that I want to sort of speak to very quickly up front in terms of the brain and what all the essentials actually provide for the brain, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I noticed people, and that a lot of my, I was informed a lot through work with the kids, so when a child can't do something or sometimes even an adult, the people say, oh, they need to get more stimulation. You know, stimulate the tongue if you can't talk, you know, stimulate the muscles or whatnot. And I noticed that doesn't seem to work very well for many of the kids, and especially if somebody had a stroke and they have spasticity, or a child that has cerebral palsy, or a child on the autism. If you give them extra stimulation, they actually get more spastic or more freaked out than they were before. I know you look a lot at emotions, so the same thing is also true for the emotional a manifestation in my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked myself, what, and everybody says stimulation because the brain needs information. Now, I agree that the brain is an information system, but I realize that stimulation is not information in its own right. There is something that the brain has to do in order for stimulation to turn into information that the brain can use, and that is the perception of differences. So if I let's say I show you color red and color blue, and you don't have the ability to see the difference between red and blue, those colors don't exist for you. And if you don't see any other colors, the difference between any other color, then you don't have the distinction of color. So in order to learn, the brain has to actually perceive differences. And one of the things that happens in aging and loss of vitality is that the brain gets less and less good at perception of differences. So, for instance, hearing, you have to start making louder sounds and bigger more intense distinctions for a person to perceive, to hear, to know what they were told. Or people lose somewhat their ability to balance well because they don't feel finer changes from the soles of their feet when they stand. Actually, if you increase their ability to feel differences of sensation, of pressure in their feet, they will gain back their balance. You don't have to do balance exercises really per se. So all essentials want everybody to get a better, stronger, more vibrant brain. When you have a better, stronger, vibrant brain, you are better, stronger, you're smarter, you move better, you learn faster, etc. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to say anything about that or ask or something?
No, I think that's a really important distinction. It led me to just think about this. When my son was young, his father did some very unique things, and he determined that one of the really essential things for young children was to be able to work with the fine muscles of their feet. And he insisted that we not put hard-sole shoes on our child for about 4 years so that he could develop. And I'm just listening to you and thinking that probably was really great. And
it was a fantastic idea. Fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, I can talk just about that for an hour, so I won't. But it was a fantastic idea.
Well, I go barefoot all the time, so I'm thinking that may help me too.
Absolutely, and change the surfaces you walk on. So
Sand,
as long as it's safe. You don't want to walk where there's, it's dangerous, nails and things like that. But you want to walk on and begin easy. You want to make it so it doesn't hurt. In the beginning, for some people, it'll hurt no matter what, but not too much and for short periods of time. But, if you go wherever there's pebbles or sand, or, I wear very, very soft shoes. Then you can still feel the ground, but you get a little bit, soft soles, so that it's almost like a glove. But it gives me the insulation, and there are different shoes like that. People can decide what they want. And do it gradually, because if you've walked in hard shoes for many years, you can't go from that to barefoot on rocks and stuff. It will be too hard to begin with. And then what happens is when your brain starts feeling those different changes and it recognizes them, it starts moving the hip joints and the lower back and the whole spine to respond to it. So it's a whole body refined kind of like flickering awake. It's like humming, all the time humming, ready to jump in and do what it needs to do, ready to jump in to do what it needs to do. So let's talk about the essentials. And say to your husband, brilliant, brilliant. Yeah. So I will go start with, I'll do movement with attention. I'll do the subtlety, the variation, the slow, and then I'll if there's any time I'll decide which one. But some of them I can do very quickly, so I'll just go into them.
Good.
Okay.
Well.
So. Yeah,
I'm happy to have you do them all if we can get to them, but I know that there's a lot to each one.
Yeah, yeah. So the first one is movement with attention. So everybody now knows that movement is very important. And so it's very, and like I have a friend that has some lung disease, and she went to here at Yale University yesterday, the expert, and he said the best thing to do is just move, 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 and move some more. So, more and more people recognize movement as a very important reality and not exercise. You see, I've been saying for years now, exercise is just a small sliver of movement. We move all the time. If we really stopped moving, we'd be dead. So movement is there. Thinking is a form of movement. Emotions is definitely a form of movement in the system if you think about the neurons and you think about the physiology. I mean, movement is, and Einstein said, nothing happens until something moves. And when we talk about move, and for children, if they don't have the initial random movements and lots of movements for growing up, they will have real trouble. And if they don't move, we know there's trouble in the nervous system. I mean, we know there's a big problem. We can look at movement and see if somebody has Parkinson's. Movement is a huge, both important thing to do in our life, but it also gives us a lot of information about ourselves. But taking it to adults, and adults that already move, we all have habits. We all have patterns of movement. So let's say we go to the gym or we do something else as exercise, right? Or even just washing dishes or, I don't know, sitting by the computer typing, any kind of movement. From the point of view of vitality and brain, positive brain growth and change, automatic movement does not create new maps and increased connections between the brain and the body. If anything, it tends to do the opposite. Now, if you say, is it better for somebody to just be a couch potato and not move at all automatically, or move automatically, I'd say move automatically. Movement is always good. So go for movement. If you want a real personal evolution and growth and vitality and the kind of health we discussed in the earlier part of this interview, it's incredibly powerful to bring one's attention, your attention, to what you feel as you move. So I call it movement with attention, but it's not just like attention to the teacher, to what somebody else says. So if you're in a class, let's say in a Zumba class, and there's very, very loud music, and you're jumping up and down, it's great, but it does not leave you the opportunity to actually, in real time, feel as you move. Feel your body. Feel the sensations. Feel, there's so much feeling that can go with it, so many sensations that can come, that do come with it, if we pay attention. Research shows that movement without attention, no change in density of brain maps in the area that moved. Movement with attention, huge changes. Huge changes. And different set of research that shows with children, 1.8 million new connections per second, so around 100 million per minute new connections in the brain, when attention is brought to the self as you move. And this is huge. Now, I found with adults the same rate of change as children the moment they do movement with attention and the other essentials at the same time. So the adult brain, I believe, has the potency for learning and change that is not that different from young children, except the adult brain already has habits. So there's this extra thing to deal with. But, yeah. So move into the attention, and you can do it when you wash dishes. And you don't have to do it all the time because you'll drive yourself crazy. But you take 5 minutes, you wash dishes, and you go, oh, I'm reaching to pick up the plate in the sink. Where do I feel the movement? Do I feel it? Oh, I feel something in my wrist. Okay, I feel something in my elbow. Do I feel anything in my back? You scan, like, your whole body because most people just pay attention to the part that's going to grab the plate. And you go, like, or if you play an instrument, I've worked with thousands of musicians, you know, you play the piano, not only your fingers play, the whole body has to be integrated into it. So pay attention to the pressure on your feet, pay attention to shift the weight in your pelvis. You do that, first of all, you will improve, you'll learn so much faster, and you will, pain goes away. I mean, it's really very, very powerful. The way you touch your child, you know, if you're going to put the diapers, become mindful and feel, pay attention to the way you move and the way the contact with the body of your child. Or if you're a lover, that'll be pretty cool to do movement with attention. You know, so on and so forth. So this is movement with attention is my very, that's why it's the first. Without it, there's nothing else to talk about. Mm-hmm. The next one, and if you want to ask or say anything in between, please, by all means.
Thank you.
You know,
I will.
Yeah, I know. Okay, good. The next one is subtlety. That's the reduction of force. So if you remember, I just spoke about the ability to perceive differences. So movement is constant change. When I move, it's constant change. When I move with attention, I'm perceiving the sensations that go with that change. That means my brain can make, it becomes information to the brain. Automatic movement is no new information to the brain. Reducing the effort increases the ability to perceive differences. It's a physiological law called Weber-Fechner that says the more intense the stimulus, the more added stimulus you need in order to feel a difference. So if I'm in a dark room and you light a match, I will see it immediately, no problem, right? But if I'm in broad daylight and you light a match behind me, I wouldn't know you did, because it's not enough added light on top of what already is there. The same thing is true for everything. It's true for hearing. If you walk down Broadway Avenue in New York and somebody talks to you just normal voice, you won't hear it because the background noise is too loud. Same thing with everything we do. So, and the same thing is true for the muscles and the joints, the proprioception, what we feel coming from the body as we move it. And if we make great efforts with our muscles, we become less attuned to our bodies. We cannot feel differences as well. We need huge added things. So it's good for doing something powerfully or fast that you already know how to do, but if you want to improve or learn something new, you're really making yourself a lot less intelligent and a lot less able to learn. So our level of intelligence is in our own hands. We can make ourselves more intelligent by paying attention to what we feel as we move and by reducing the effort. And I want to give you a little example, because I listened to what you said in the break about partnering with your child and how to deal with, you know, your teenager and being an incredible parent. Mm-hmm. A big part of that is reducing the force. You know, with children, both in terms of the movement, even the way parents change diapers. So when I work with parents and I see them sometimes change diapers, I show them that they could change diapers so their child, they will have to feel what's going on, so they get smarter and more attuned and sensitive to the child. Excuse me, I'm going to cough here. And the child becomes more intelligent, because when you touch the child gently, and you pay attention to what you feel as you move, the child pays attention to what they feel as they move, and guess what? Their brain goes like, oh, they don't have words, but they recognize patterns. They recognize the pelvis is rolled up, the pelvis is rolled down, and if you can even use words with it. You get an attentive learning infant. I've had infants learn and respond to me 5 days old, as young as 5 days old. That's the youngest I worked with. And a few weeks old, and a few months old. It's just amazing. They're brilliant, and you become brilliant. So reduce the force. The first easiest place to do it is the muscular level. Then the emotional level. You know, when we have difficulty with another person, there is a tendency for the emotions become more and more intense. And at that level of intensity, we're pretty stupid usually. You know, but if, and I know that that's your field of expertise, that's your mission, you know. Mm-hmm. So if you reduce the intensity, you recognize the intensity, and sometimes you can't reduce it immediately. But if you take a little walk, you know, see, kind of sort out what's going on, because it's all like one big mush, and then when you're calmer, you can listen to yourself and know what's really going on for you, and you can listen to the other. And then almost anything can be worked out. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever the solution is or what the decisions are, I don't know the content, but things can be done because you're differentiating your emotions. Emotions require differentiation, just like anything else.
Let me share a story of my grandchild who changed when she was about an hour old. Mm. She had a very difficult birth because the doctor didn't take into account that her mother's pelvis had been broken and she didn't come out straight, and so she was had an Apgar of 4 when she was born, and she was floppy and blue, and they had to call in a respiration therapist. They afterwards took her to the neonatal nursery, and I traditionally talk to young children. I had been invited into the birth room, so I was present for the whole thing. And I went and talked with her, and I told her that I understood that she'd had a very rough transition coming into the world. And the nurse in the corner had all these dials and whatever. She was looking at her oxygen saturation level and her breathing and her heartbeat and all of that. She was all connected up. And I, speaking of emotions, I said, I really believe if I'd had that experience that I would not feel safe. And I want you to know that that's over. And you are safe, and you won't have to go through that again in this lifetime. And your job right now is just to come into your body and regulate it and participate with it. And I was holding her little hand was wrapped around my little finger. And after I told her that, the nurse looked up and said, whatever you're doing over there, keep it up. Everything just went to normal.
You know, oh, my God. You know, it's like I just, first of all, if you don't mind ever sometime typing this story, because I want to write a blog about it, if you don't mind.
No, no problem.
I have learned working with, amazing. I'm really moved by your story because, you know, the second chapter in my book, Kids Beyond Limits, is from fixing to connecting. And the whole question of connecting with the other, or connecting with ourselves for that matter, but connecting with the other, because I say brains grow and thrive or don't. Brains live in community of brains. Brains are not apart. They're really in a community of brains. And when I work with children that have had trauma, I discovered that telling them their story does something, and even when they don't understand language, somehow I take them, and sometimes I have the parent tell me what happened, and then I tell it to the child because I know how to do it, and I tell them their story, and when I'm done telling the story, they're transformed, and I can do more breakthroughs with them.
Wow.
It is extremely powerful. I do that. I teach that to my teachers to do. Telling infants their story. And by the way, a hugely wonderful thing to do with kids, even every night, putting them to sleep, you can read them a book, and then you can tell them the story of the day. And they can participate once they talk. I went there, and then I got scared, and then mommy held me, and you don't psychologize it. You just tell the story, and the adult has, you see, that what you did with her, you knew, you took the stand that she's fine and she's going to be fine. So there was no anxiety. The vibration coming from you was perfect. So you can do it as a practice with your child, and you can do it as a practice as adults with your spouse or your friend or something, where you say, tell me your story. And you can do it in 3-4 minutes. You don't have to do it in 100 years. Very important. Very powerful. And behind it, there's the even bigger principle, is from fixing to connecting. We don't impose. We connect with, and we drive together. Anyway,
yes.
Can I go
yes.
to the next? Yeah, you and I can just have a party together for a long time. I can see that.
Yeah. Well, that was
we're connecting here, girl. We're connecting.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
I love it. Yeah.
If I could, I know you didn't list it, but I was fascinated with the turning on of the learning switch, and I just
kept
turning pages to find out what I could do.
Yeah. Okay. So the learning switch is, we have to understand that either we're in a learning mode. The brain, it's literally in a learning mode or not a learning mode. So you know, when you're running to the bus to catch it really, really fast and or something like that, you're not about to learn 5 new words in French. That's like an extreme example. But I checked that with some in movement and in movement therapy scientists and so on. The brain does shift. A learning mode or non-learning mode. And I've seen that with people in general, and very extreme with the children, very extreme. So if I take somebody and I start moving them fast and hard and try to make them stand when they can't or make them talk when they can't, they're not going to do positive brain change, the learning, the differentiation that has to happen in the brain, and then the integration that creates new things that weren't there before, new abilities, new skills, new possibilities. So I put in it as an essential, so that either if you're doing it with somebody else or you're doing it for yourself, you're checking in to see whether you are in a learning, ready to learn, available, have the conditions to learn or not. So if you're too tired, don't try to do it. You had some alcohol, don't look for it. If you do drugs, forget it altogether. You know, if you're very upset emotionally, it's not going to happen. If you're fearful, not going to happen. I mean, you can learn certain things under this kind of, but it's the kind of learning that dissociates us from the process. That we learned that we're not able to do it. We learn not to try. We learn to avoid. But we don't, and we do survival patterns, but we don't learn the way I talk about learning. So, and once you start looking for this distinction, I can tell you, I know when I'm in a learning mode and when I'm not. And I can up the dial on my learning switch, up and up and up, when I choose to learn, or I sometimes intentionally say, I've had enough. I'm not going to try to learn. I'm closing the conversation. I'm not learning right now. So it's become sort of an intentional thing that we can do. Now, every one of the essentials also turns the learning switch on. Mm-hmm. So even if you don't know how to do it, by participating, by applying the essentials, you're going to find yourself becoming a better learner, more intelligent, more brilliant, more flexible in your body and your mind. So it's going to happen anyway, but I wanted people to become aware of it so that they can mm-hmm. intentionally move themselves in and more in, or know when they're not available, know when their child is not available to learn, you know, when it is time to try and make the kid do things, when it's not time, and what conditions to create that make the child become a stronger, better learner.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, as you're getting here, Anat, over the years as a therapist, I've come to understand our earth as a giant school to which we've all come to learn. So you're saying, well, when you're emotionally upset, you may not be in a good space to learn. But I have found that having adopted the idea that every time I have an emotion, it is offering me an opportunity to learn, then I'm deliberately going to find the learning from emotional situations, which in some ways does allow me to do, to learn.
Oh, yeah, but mm-hmm. absolutely. But you do the learning by observing the emotional situation.
Yes, okay.
Okay, so here you are. You've slowed everything down. You've created a distinction. That emotion was not all other emotions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I got all upset with my mom, when blah, 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 you define it and say, okay, let's look at that. And the person might start getting some of those feelings, but when you create the observation, you slow it down, you obviously reduce the intensity. Because if the person is like hysterical, you know, hitting their head to the wall, foaming at the mouth, you're just going to do anything to just calm them down. They're not going to learn anything. They're not going to have any insight.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what you're doing is, that's the same thing I do with movement. So when somebody wants to learn how to, let's say, their balance is not as good, right? They're 60 years old, 70 years mm-hmm. old, and they find that their balance is not as good. What I'm going to do is I'm probably going to put them lying on their back, and I'm going to start having them do different movements. And one of those movements might be putting the, you know, bending the knee and putting the foot standing on the floor, and then starting to press on the foot and move the foot a little in and a little out, and feel when the foot feels this way and when the foot feels that way, and how does that connect to the movement of the pelvis, and how that connects. So it's the same thing. I take the movement that they need, the function that they want to learn, and I start looking at but away from the demand.
Hmm.
You see, so in therapy, you create a very safe space, you, and that's where they can start looking at it, reducing this thing, and start learning. Does that make, am I correct with
yes.
what I'm saying?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I'm not about not, yeah, you got it. I don't think I need to say more, because I'd like to say a few things. So a very important, two other ones that I have to say, and then and one that's so important for vitality also. So we said that the movement with attention, we said learning switch, the subtlety. Now I want to talk about slow. Most people think about slow as, if you look at the dictionary, deaf, retarded, unintelligent,
oh,
you know, something
yeah.
like that. I mean, I looked it up when I wrote the book, and I went like, oh, my God, slow has such a bad rap. Anyway, so, but the thing is that slowing down is one of the most powerful ways to bring transformation, because fast, neurologically, fast, we can only do what we already know. So when we go fast, and it's important to be able to go fast, it's important to be able to go on automatic. I don't want every morning to learn how to stand up again. I want to be able to just stand up, right? Or drive
right.
my car, or talk to you. I don't want to have to think how to say the word say every time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's important. However, fast, we can only do what we already know. That's how the brain is structured. It's the whole process of myelinization and grooving in and all that stuff. So fast, we're built to do things fast, and fast we can only do what we already know. So if we want something new, we have to slow down. And when we really slow down, again, that gives the space for the brain to perceive, notice, feel what's going on. Remember, perception of differences,
mm-hmm.
information. So slowing down floods the brain with new information. And I had this 92-year-old woman that came to me for lessons, and I remember she couldn't reach down to tie her shoes, you know, so that can be a big issue if you, you know, you want to be independent. And I did some work with her, but then I just had her slow down and did a little bit of the next essential variations. And in 10 minutes, she could put on the shoes. She was right there. The brain was like, oh, I can do that. So slow, very important. Variation. If you do the same thing, you don't give new information to your brain. Variation is an extremely powerful essential, very easy to apply. So if you're going to reach out to pick up something on your desk and you start doing it, you take your arm back and you say, how about if I do it from a different direction? How about if I turn around and reach from behind? If you play the piano, play it normal, then cross your hands and play, the right hand doing the left doing the right. How about you turn around and play with the right hand behind you? How about then you play with the left hand behind you? How about you cross your right knee over the left? How about you look to the right when you play the passage? How about you look to the left when you play the passage? You do that, and I guarantee you that then you stop and just play without thinking about it anymore. Within 5 minutes, you wouldn't believe the improvement in the speed of your fingers, in the accuracy, in the quality of the music. I've done it with literally thousands of musicians. So it's true for everything. And with teenagers, oh, my God. One of the things that drives teenagers crazy, you know, parents say that teenagers are horrible. I think they're actually fantastic.
They're wonderful, yes.
They're wonderful.
I've got my 17-year-old granddaughter visiting me right now. I've never had so much fun.
Yeah, and variation. You know how kids look at their parents and the parents start telling them something and they kind of roll their eyes? It's
yes.
because they know exactly what's going to come next and what's going to come next, and then they are bored, they're irritated by it. It drives them crazy. Surprise your kid. Do things differently. Stop being so righteous. Allow things to be wrong.
You know, Anat, let me tell you a quick story about that. And we have a lot we have to do when we're coming close to the end of the hour, too.
Yes.
My daughter at age 10 rolled her eyes up in her head because I had a tendency to go on and on lecturing. And I
yes.
knew I was doing it, but I somehow didn't seem to be able to stop. So with the idea of partnering with my child, I asked her if she'd help me. And
yes.
so we set up this this plan where whenever she felt she understood what I was trying to tell her, she would say the words, I got it, Mom. And then that was my signal to stop talking.
Okay.
And the first time I knew I was doing it, and she knew I was doing it, but the very first time she told me, just stopped me cold. I got embarrassed when she said, I got it, Mom. And it helped me.
Yeah.
It was like I think we did it three times, and I changed the pattern. So
hello, and that's a huge change, by the way. You can't imagine the number of connections you had to form and move around to do that. That's fantastic.
Well, yeah, it was.
Yeah,
really,
that's wonderful.
It was a lot of
fun. You and your husband just sound so wonderful. I just tell very quick, my daughter one time was crying, whatever was going on, I don't even remember the content, and she says, I said, why don't you tell? She says, there's no point. You keep doing the same thing. I said, sweetheart, be patient with me. Just don't give up on me. Keep telling me what you need and keep telling me when I mess up.
Uh-huh.
I promise you I will learn eventually. I said, I'm not going to ever give up on you, and please don't give up on me. So just educate me, okay?
Oh, that's so wonderful.
I don't know, because I tried one. I tried before. I said, one time. You tried one time. Give me at least 10. You know, I said, I'm slow, honey. I'm a slow learner. Just be nice to me, because you love me, and I love you. You know?
And it worked, didn't it?
It worked better. You know,
yeah.
I could still be a better mom, but, you know, do my own essentials better with her. But, you know, it took me a while to figure it out. So,
One of the things that I've said is that the design of parents and children's, the parent and children system, is that parents are supposed to be have flaws, otherwise the children would have nothing to learn.
Yeah, and who says what's a flaw? I mean, it's just part of the deal.
Well, we're not perfect. Listen,
thank God.
We have to stop, and yes. I want to be sure that there's some things that you have available. I want to remind people that your website is anatbaniel.com, anatbaniel.com, and that you have some wonderful CD programs. I have Healthy Necks and Shoulders and Healthy Backs. They can be used by people who live far away from Marin County. You are having a special fundraiser on August 29th at your center in Marin County with Byron Katie, which I know
Isn't
a lot.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, because let me tell you, parents, especially parents of children with special needs, suffer. And Byron Katie's work is just amazing. And I just asked her if she would come do it, and she said yes. So anyone who can be in Marin County on August 29th between 1 and 3 in the afternoon, it's a Friday, I just so think you will, it's so worth it. It's unbelievable. So I'm really encouraging people to do that. And you know something else that I mentioned to you that I'd like to say?
Please.
We open once every 2 years a training program for practitioners. That means people who want to do the work. And by the way, anybody who wants to look for a practitioner, you just go to my website and there's find the practitioner page and they're all listed. But we are opening a new training program in a month on September 6th. And it is an amazing training, and it's going to be, it's 10 segments, 4 of the segments, 40%, it will be done online so people don't have to travel as often. And 6 are done in person. It is amazing transformation for the people who take it. Many parents with children with special needs take the training to work with their own kid and then with other kids. And professionals, physical therapists, psychotherapists, so on. So people who want to find out, you can get to it from the main website, or you can go to Anat Baniel Training, A-N-A-T-B-A-N-I-E-L training.com, and find information, because the next one will not open until 2016.
Wow. Okay, I'm glad we fit that in. Now, we also have some comments from the chat that I want to share with you. Anat is quite right about the possibly endless dialogue between the two of you, and it seems to me that this is the result of turning on the brain to learn, and it's true for everyone if they choose it.
I love it.
Yeah, and she, let's see, this person also says, the show is a walk-the-talk experience of how especially exciting and energizing it is whenever learning brains meet up. So.
Oh, nice. Thank you, whoever wrote it. Thank you, thank you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I also want to invite people. I keep forgetting it, and I'd like to follow us on Facebook or like us or whatever it's called. It's facebook.com/ Anat Baniel Method. So, or Twitter, I don't know however Twitter goes. It's twitter.com/ Anat Baniel. So, and I want to thank you. I mean, for me, it's discovering you and your work. It's really wonderful. And if you're willing to type up that little story about, amazing story about your grandchild, granddaughter, I would love to elaborate on that and use it in a blog about connection, you know.
Yes, that would be great. I plan to use that story. I'm presenting at a Parenting 2.0 conference on life skills in Ireland in September, which goes right through your initial training. So, but I'm planning to use that story to really demonstrate what is possible with children when we're working with them. So I really appreciate your input.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Thank you. Yeah.
So, you know, when we see our own movement and vitality improve, as I have through your work, then it's inspired me to look for the possibilities in me and everything. And I think this is a vital message for our times that we haven't really emphasized. But you put it out in such simple, straightforward, and loving ways that it just really... I want to thank you for writing Move Into Life and Kids Beyond Limits, for being who you are, and for helping us to focus on the possibilities of what can happen instead of what can't. I also want to thank you for being on the show today. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a fantastic time.
Good. I did too.
Okay.
All right.
And good luck in Ireland and everything else. Thank you. Thank
you.
Thank you.
Bye. Let me remind you that Anat's books are Move Into Life and Kids Beyond Limits, and her website is AnatBanielMethod.com. And next week, get your questions ready for the amazing Audrey Pearson, who's a senior mentor with Accessing Universal Intelligence. Getting just one question answered by Audrey can absolutely change your life. I've sent my own family members to her for mentoring. They've had amazing results. So tell all the people you love and care about that they can get answers to their vital questions also. Be sure to listen next Thursday, August 14th, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern. Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media, our producer. Thank you, Paul, for now. I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.